This is Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
Welcome to the October 23rd, 2019 edition of the MMA Report Podcast with Daniel Galvan. I am Jason Floyd. I come up here on this week's edition of the show. We are going to talk about what happened last Friday night at UFC Boston. We'll talk about the inhaler controversy with Greg Hardy and ask a very important question about that whole controversy. We'll also talk about Dom Reyes making his case for a title shot. What does the future hold for Chris Weidman? Also, what does the future hold for Joe Lozon following his win? Then it's going to be the interview portion of the show. You're going to hear my conversation with Eric Anders as he's going to recap his win just a couple weeks ago at UFC Tampa as he defeated Gerald Merchart. Then you're going to hear from Maurice Green, the Crochet Boss, who fights on Saturday at UFC Singapore, talking to him about his matchup. Also, you're going to hear from a fighter who's fighting on Saturday at Bellator 232, Lance Gibson Jr. Yes, that is the son of Lance Gibson. His stepmother is Julia Budd. So I had a great conversation with him talking about his matchup coming up here on Saturday. Then we are going to preview this weekend's Bellator 231, UFC Singapore, and Bellator 232. We're going to ask a question about if you could only watch one card this weekend, which card would you pick? We'll give our top five fights of the weekend, and also we are going to talk about the 30 for 30 documentary on Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz. We'll give our thoughts about it, also discuss what other MMA 30 for 30 docs we would be interested in seeing. Daniel, how you doing on this Wednesday morning, man?
I'm doing good, Jason. It's a cool Wednesday morning in Hidalgo, Texas. Things are just preparing for the day when the Huntington Beach bad boy and Alberto Del Rio arrive and spice things up. But I'm doing good, Jason. We got one heck of a show in store for us.
Yeah, man. I actually walked out of the house this morning. A little cool here in Tampa. I was like, all right, I'm digging it. You know, and I know I'm headed to Nashville this weekend. I was looking at the weather. It's like in the 50s and 60s. I'm like, all right, I'm digging this. I can actually kind of like, you know, pull out some of our my Florida winter clothes, because, you know, Florida, we really don't have winter clothes. We just like have a long sleeve. You know, we got hoodies, that type of thing. But yeah, Nashville, one of my favorite cities to go to. So looking forward to that coming up this weekend as I'll head up to Nashville on Saturday. Buccaneers play the Titans on Sunday as our Road Warriors continue as this long stretch of road trips concludes after next week. Head to Seattle next week. Seattle, another favorite stop for me. But Daniel, last Friday, it was UFC Boston, and clearly the biggest storyline heading out of UFC Boston is Greg Hardy. And Greg tends to find himself in these situations. Of course, it was after a second round, before the third round. He takes an inhaler. And, you know, look, I think of overall, this is my general thoughts, and I'll get your thoughts. A, I do not believe Greg Hardy was attempting to cheat or game the system. To me, the fault starts with the commission inspector when Hardy asked the inspector if he could use it. That, to me, it falls there. I think the second blame has to go on that corner of Greg Hardy. I mean, he trains at American Top Team, one of the best gyms in the world. They should know that you can't use an inhaler in the middle of a fight. And, you know, I listened to what John McCarthy said on his podcast. I made some calls about this. And, I mean, yeah, it's straight up, you know, you can't do this. And I thought it was interesting on John McCarthy and Josh Thompson's podcast, which is coming one of my favorite MMA podcasts to listen to. Josh Thompson talked about, you know, what he would do, because obviously he dealt with the same situation where 20 minutes before a fight, he would, you know, use his inhaler, and then because he knew he could not use it during a fight. But to me, the blame starts with that commission inspector, because that commission inspector has to know the rules. And if you don't know the rule, there's a plenty of commission executives that are around that you can ask that rule. So overall, my thought is I do not believe Greg Hardy was attempting to cheat.
Yeah, I would say the commission inspector is definitely in the wrong, but I do have a little bit of empathy for him just because, like, you know what? I can relate. Sometimes you're on the job and you just make the wrong decision. Like, you're just out here chilling with a bag of popcorn in your hand in the middle of a fight, and all of a sudden you get asked this really important question you got to make a quick decision on, and you make the totally wrong choice. Like, that has happened to me plenty of times on the job. And unfortunately for this commissioner, or this inspector, he made the wrong choice because he cost a dude a fight. Instead of kind of taking a step back, saying either I don't know or giving him the correct answer, he kind of just assumed. And it, I guess it's one of those situations where when you're in the middle of something, you don't feel as though you have much time to answer. You're just going to give an answer, and it was a wrong answer. So I have some empathy for the inspector, but he is totally in the wrong and is probably in the doghouse for the at the next Massachusetts Athletic Commission meeting for sure. I think the blame also goes on the Greg Hardy camp, because you got to dot your I's and cross your T's. Obviously, the inhaler is a unique thing we don't see quite often, and usually we see before fights, and that's just something you got to take care of prior to a fight. You got to figure out what the rules are and or – you know, do the proper paperwork. And it appears, although Dana White said they did do the proper paperwork, it seems like they really haven't, because obviously, you know, the fight wouldn't have been ruled a no contest if they had. So they probably should have done their due diligence and done the proper paperwork. So there's a lot of blame to go. But I mean, if you watch the fight, what you saw was a guy win rounds one and two, look really comfortable and good on the feet. Ben Salisbury was definitely the best guy I've seen Greg Hardy fight thus far. In terms of, like, he looked comfortable, he just wasn't the better fighter on Friday night.
Yeah, I mean, and if this is your first time listening to me and Daniel, you know, look, we've talked about the past with Greg Hardy, and the thing that we've always said we want to do on this podcast is talk about what we see with Greg Hardy, you know, in the octagon, you know, of what we see. You know, we've said what we've said about his past, and you know, but in terms of this podcast, we're going to talk about what we saw. And look, it's clearly everyone, you look on MMA social media on a Greg Hardy fight night, you know how the community feels about Greg Hardy being in the position he's in. But let me ask you this question, Daniel. How different would the MMA community reaction be if the fighter is not named Greg Hardy that used an inhaler?
I think it would definitely be different. There would probably be a bit more empathy for the fighter, because Greg Hardy is definitely one of the bad guys in this sport. I think he's definitely one of the guys. He's probably one of the most – he's probably one of, if not the least liked fighter in the sport. He comes in with a lot of bad will when he made the transition to the sport. It's really, really hard for people to come around. So when you start off with a bad will – whenever things happen, people tend to look at things negatively versus if you start off with goodwill. It's like, for instance, if I'm trying to think of a good example. If like every day I walk out and I like kick a dog or whatever, let's say I do that, I'm just the worst person ever. And then one Sunday I accidentally like stumble into a cat, people are going to think I did it on purpose. Whereas if every day I never kick dogs and I accidentally stumble into a cat, people think I did it by accident. That's a really poor example. But the moral of the story is a lot of people don't like Greg Hardy. And when there's any kind of controversy, people are going to definitely one, this will be a big issue. And two, people aren't really going to side with Hardy.
Yeah, look, I think our listeners know where you're coming from. Yeah, and I would say he's the most hated fighter in the UFC by far.
Well, the only one I would think of would be Conor McGregor. Like more people, like a higher percentage of people hate Greg Hardy, but more people care kind of about Conor. Yeah, it is. You're right.
With Greg, I think, you know, if let's say, for example, this was Donald Cerrone who used inhaler, I think the reaction is completely different. And unfortunately, Greg Hardy, in a way, he got effed by the Massachusetts State Athletic Commission, because you had an inspector who clearly did not know the rules. You know, and I had someone tweet at me and basically saying, you know, because I had tweeted out about, said that, you know, look, you know, to me, the blame starts with that inspector. And someone noted, like, you know, look, they don't make much money, but I'm like, look, it's their job. You know, they have to know the rules, that you can't do this. I mean, Greg Hardy got effed in this situation. I think it's interesting how quickly Massachusetts, it looks like, is trying to cover their tracks on this one as quickly as they possibly can. You know, obviously, First Round Management, the management company of Greg Hardy, is going to appeal this. You know, the fact of, I can't recall a fight being overturned to a no contest as quickly as this one was. Even though I don't think he's really got an opportunity to get it overturned. But, you know, the crazy part of the Greg Hardy story is the fact of this guy's going to now fight in 18 days or 17 days now as we're doing this show, as he's replacing Junior Dos Santos against Alexander Volkov. So, Dan, when I saw the tweet, my initial thought was I thought someone made a fake Brett Okamoto Twitter account. I was like, this can't be right. And then, like, I click on a profile. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's Brett. And I'm just like, man, and massive step up in competition. Greg Hardy is a competitor. But, man, this is – I mean, you talk about you are going right into the deep end of the UFC heavyweight division. I mean, look, I'll give him credit, man. This guy's got some balls on him to step up and to go to Russia and fight Alexander Volkov. And I know that – I mean, look, Volkov should win this fight. I think there's no doubt about it. But, look, MMA, all it takes is one punch. And, we talk about the hatred people have for Greg Hardy. I think that one of the things that I think there are some people that hate Greg Hardy do not want to admit this. Greg Hardy is a developing fighter. You can see the changes in his game from, his first official UFC fight to where he is now. I don't think he wins his fight, but I don't think it's a far-fetched thing to say that he knocks out Alexander Volkov.
He definitely has enough power to do so. He has enough power to play the role of spoiler. Look, when the odds come out, Greg Hardy is going to be a massive, massive, massive underdog. We're talking about a super, super green fighter when it comes to being a top 10 type guy. He's fought seven times, and a lot of his competition hasn't been great. And he doesn't really have a long background in combat sports. It's not like a guy who spent his whole life in the jiu-jitsu circle or boxing or kickboxing. And this is his third year in the sport. He spent his whole life playing football, so he's still getting that foundation. So what Greg Hardy has in his toolbox, aside from developing, which there has been fight-to-fight improvement, it is the physical traits. And in the heavyweight division, the physical traits can really, really increase as we move up to the heavyweight division. It's more likely you have the ability to land that one shot that lays to waste your opponent. I mean, we've seen guys go on runs in the heavyweight division based on early first-round victories just catching leather. So it's certainly possible that Greg Hardy can shock the world and be the most hated man. He'll be the only man that is hated in both United States and Russia if he knocks out Alexander Volkov in Moscow. But when it comes to what I think is going to happen, I think Volkov is going to absolutely run through him. I mean, this is a huge step up in competition. That can't be stressed enough. Mm-hmm. The top 15 of the heavyweight division really tapers off after like number 8 or 7. So it's not unrealistic to expect Greg Hardy to be a part of that top 15 sooner rather than later. But it just is unrealistic for me to expect him to hang with the top 10 heavyweights in the world in such a short period of time, because as fast as he's developing, the rate at which it's going, he's just not at the same level as a fighter like Alexander Volkov, who we've seen compete at the highest level for quite a while, a guy who's essentially only lost one fight in his last seven, a guy who's had nearly 40 professional fights, and I think a big step up. Obviously, always the potential for an upset in the heavyweight division. But I think it adds a little juice to this fight. People are going to be interested and may want to watch this one live in Russia.
So I just went to bestfightodds.com, and there are two books that have a line out on Volkov and Hardy. And I think your jaw is going to drop when you hear what these lines are. Bovada has Alexander Volkov minus 270, Greg Hardy plus 210. Bet Online has Volkov minus 260, Greg Hardy plus 210. I would have thought Volkov would be at least a 4-1 favorite.
Yeah, that's incredibly surprising. I mean, like, what would the equivalent be? It would be like if you took – I can't even think of an equivalent fight right now. Like, if you look at that UFC card that we just saw, I mean, it'd be like having – I don't know. I can't even think of one. It'd be like having who – Sean Brady's next fight against, someone like Nate Diaz or something. Like, and Sean Brady's come along. Like, Sean Brady's at a much higher level than Hardy is in terms of experience, I think. That's crazy. But I guess that just explains two things. It explains there's people wanting to put money on Greg Hardy because he's kind of like the Dallas Cowboys or the Green Bay Packers in this situation where he's the individual that the public knows, so they put money on him. But those odds seem so low. I can't believe that. That's crazy.
You got to imagine those odds are going to get bet up. I mean, people are just going to probably hit that Volkov. Now, it should be noted, of course, originally Volkov JDS was going to be the main event of the fight card. However, this is now the co-main event. The main event will be Zabit Magomed Sherpov versus Calvin Kattar. Of course, that fight was supposed to take place at the UFC Boston show, but my understanding is a staph infection is ultimately what caused Zabit Magomed Sherpov to get this fight to get delayed, but yeah, we'll see what happens there. Of course, you know, really the storyline of UFC Boston really should be about Dom Reyes remaining undefeated and just looks great against Chris Weidman, knocks him out 1:43. And of course, Dom Reyes is, you know, doing what he can to put himself, into a title opportunity. I mean, look, and you look at his size, his reach. I mean, he might be a guy that could potentially give John a little bit of fits. But, you know, I think we have to wait till after UFC 244 to decide who is next for John Jones, because, you know, there is a notable matchup there on that UFC 244 card in the light heavyweight division of Corey Anderson and Johnny Walker. I think if Corey Anderson gets a win against Johnny Walker, he's got a great case. I think what ultimately will help Dom Reyes is, you know, outside of his fight against Volkan Ozdemir, this guy has been a very fun fighter to watch. You know, but I think we're going to have to wait to see what happens between Anderson and Walker before figuring out who's going to be next for John Jones.
Yeah, I think so too. I think tentatively, I think Dominic Reyes has earned the next shot. A guy like Johnny Walker with the big win could really earn a shot here because, like, he really captivates people. He's really entertaining. He could gather a lot of momentum and steam. But for the time being, it's clear Dominic Reyes is in the top spot to earn a title shot. I mean, when you look at the light heavyweight rankings, Cormier, Santos, Smith, the three guys ahead of him, that's just not on the horizon. So then you look at Dominic Reyes, and I think at number four, he's absolutely number one in terms of like the pecking order for who deserves a shot at John Jones. Walker and Corey Anderson are going to have that opportunity to show that. But again, Reyes is the way to go. Just such an exciting fighter and looked unbelievable against Chris Weidman. He goes in that main event and gets taken down by Chris Weidman early on, but turns things around and just stifles and stumps Chris Weidman, earning a performance of the night bonus. Just his hands are heavy. He has a great killer instinct, and he went out and sent Chris Weidman in the loss column and also in the what the hell do I do now column. I mean, Dominic Reyes absolutely starched Chris Weidman.
Yeah, just a great performance, and now this is one win in his last six fights for Chris Weidman. Those losses, Luke Rockhold, Romero, Gegard Mousasi, Jacare Souza, Dom Reyes, and all of those losses by TKO or KO. The one win was against Kelvin Gastelum, and Chris Weidman went to his Instagram account on Tuesday, and he wrote this. He goes, "I just want to let everyone know I'm good, just obviously bummed with the result. I knew Dom was a tough fight, and he proved to be more than that with a beautiful time left hand that put me down in the first. I jumped in with a right hand, and the range was off, and he capitalized. Sucks for me. As for what's next for me, I'm hearing a lot of you should retire comments, and I get where you are coming from based on the results of my recent fights. It's crazy with the win over Reyes, the chance of me fighting for the world championships were very strong. Now, to get hit with the retirement talk is really a big swing for me to get used to hearing. I will tell you that I am definitely not ready to retire. I still love this, and I'm very hungry to get back in there. I believe I have the abilities to be world champion. I know some of you are shaking your head and laughing at me when I say that. Well, screw you, and thanks for the motivation. This fight, I was coming off a year layoff, two major surgeries, a weight class change, way too much time out of the gym, and I feel like that did play a role in this fight. The fact that I'm healthy right now and I can get back in the gym is territory that I'm not used to. I will be back soon, and I will look good doing it. Thank you for everyone for support. I'm sorry I let you down." You know, I think, you know, when you've lost five out of six and all the losses are by TKO and KO. And you know, people are going to naturally say, you know, what should be next for you? You know, I think obviously, look, there's got to be question marks on the chin of Chris Weidman. But, you know, the other part of this is when you look at all those losses, I mean, it's against the top of the divisions of when he's fought those fighters and still fighters who are at the top of that division. But to me, like, I don't see the UFC getting out of the Chris Weidman business, but this may be the perfect time, Daniel. Chris Weidman, Anderson Silva 3, and I think you do it in Brazil.
You know, that's a great idea. That's certainly a fight you can feature in a big way in Brazil. It's like the Roy Nelson, Frank Mir, but in the middleweight division, you know. Both these guys passed their prime coming off losses, but screw it. Let's do it anyway. People will care. People will watch it. That's a nice plan. I think you should submit it to the UFC, you know, tip box, because they should certainly do that, because that's where Chris Weidman's at in his career. Simply put, when you look at the UFC rankings, Chris Weidman's not a part of any top 15. That's astonishing. That's crazy. That's a fall from grace. And for Chris Weidman, it's pretty simple. He's got to prove it. He's got to show it. He can come up with a million reasons why his performance didn't go particularly well. But at the end of the day, he's in a massive need to rehabilitate his image and to show people that he's still got it. So if it's not a fight against Anderson Silva, it's someone of that ilk. You know, let's say Shogun beats Sam Alvey. Or hell, if he loses to Sam Alvey at the fight night card later on in November, maybe Shogun Weidman. But it's got to be a massive step down in competition. Maybe Tyson Pedro, for instance, and whenever Pedro returns from his knee injury, or Krylov, it's got to be a massive step down in competition, because Chris Weidman has shown he just cannot compete with the top level guys at this point.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. You know, let's not give Chris Weidman a top five guy. But I think their question is are you a 205 or are you an 85er? Is Chris Weidman just at that point where he just doesn't want to cut weight? Is this, you know, is he ultimately one of those guys that is really in between 85 and 205, you know? And I mean, the UFC, I don't think is ever going to adopt new weight classes. Clearly, they're never going to adopt 195, just because it would just kill the depth at 90, at 205 and 185. You know, as much as I would love to see them do a 165 pound weight class, I just think that's never going to happen. But, you know, I mean, if Weidman, and obviously the Instagram post, he wants to continue fighting, you know, give him a lower top 15, top 20 type guy, and, you know, see if he can turn this thing around. You know, all, you know, speaking of retirement, the guy that Dana White wants to see retire is Joe Lauzon, and he goes out there, gets a TKO win in the first round against Jonathan Pierce. You know, look, there's not a – if you want to write a way to go out of this sport, that's how you go out of this sport if you're Joe Lauzon. But, you know, I always go back to what Chael Sonnen said, you know, more times than not, the way you go out of this sport is you're looking up at the lights.
Hey, man, it's what you know how to do. It's what you're trained how to do. And it's just like it's hard to go out on a win, because you think you still got some more left in you.
Yeah.
And it's what you're trained. It's what you've been training your whole life for. I mean, we're going to talk about 30 for 30 later, but we got an inside scoop on that with the way Liddell and Ortiz continue their careers. But that should be the last we see of Joe Lauzon, because he's taken so much damage. It's not going to get better in the lightweight division. We've seen him compete against average to above average lightweights in the UFC. It's not going to get better. Phenomenal victory in Boston for Joe Lauzon. That should be a wrap, and it should be a wrap for Joe Lauzon, and it's just a start for a future star in Macy Barber, who looked great against Jillian Robertson, Jason.
You know Joe's going to fight again. You know he is. Like, the odds are he's fighting again.
Give him guys who don't have Wikipedia profiles. All right. Like, let's take care of Joe Lauzon.
Yeah, just like Weidman. He should be fighting top five guys. No, I mean, there's no doubt about it. But if you're going to go out of the sport, I mean, that's in your hometown, you know where you live, and you run my understanding, a very successful gym business. You know, my understanding is you go to Lauzon's on Saturday. It's a who's who of the Northeast MMA that's in there for sparring. But yeah, you mentioned Macy Barber. I mean, she looked great. You know, that's clearly, you look at her. You know, I don't see the UFC granting her wish of Paige VanZant. I think the UFC is going to. I do believe the UFC, if if Paige VanZant does not sign a new contract with them, I think they're going to give her the most difficult fight possible. You know, Josh Thompson had a really great line on his podcast. I don't know if it was last episode or episode four. They were talking about Paige VanZant, and he said, you know, one of the things the UFC really relies on is they rely on fighters needing money. And he talked about a story of when he was supposed to fight Anthony Pettis. Pettis got injured, and they offered him, you know, he's like some guy. He didn't mention the fighter's name, but he said, he's like, I didn't know who this guy was. I knew he wasn't a top five guy. And my thing was I wanted a top five opponent, and I was willing just to sit back and wait for Anthony Pettis. And he goes, and basically it was my manager, Bob Cook, telling the UFC, look, Josh has got plenty of money. He can sit and wait a year for Anthony Pettis. He doesn't have to fight. And he goes, then magically they offered me Benson Henderson. You know, so I got the fight that I wanted. I wanted a top five fight. And I look at Paige VanZant, and look, I feel, you know, the gut feeling of Paige VanZant is in two fights from now, she's not fighting in the UFC. She's fighting in Bellator.
Well, if that's the case, they're going to absolutely try and hurt as much of her credibility.
Macy Barber will F her up.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. I mean, like, if you are in Team Paige VanZant, you shouldn't have her take that fight.
Yeah, if you're in Team Paige VanZant,
oof.
You got to go out on a victory, I think. You really want to. Regardless, her brand will be okay, but it could definitely be diminished. It reminds me a lot of, like, if you have an NFL team with, like, a running back who's, like, got the last year of their deal. Where it's like, no, you can go ahead and get more carries at this game. Screw it. Because, you know, it's like that load management. You don't necessarily care if the guy's not a part of your roster the following year. Whereas maybe, you know, for a guy like Todd Gurley, who's going to be in the Rams picture for a while, you do care about that load management. And so it's kind of the same thing where it's like, well, we don't particularly care about your credibility as a fighter in terms of, like, protecting you. We're not going to protect you. We're going to use you to get our other fighters over who we know will probably be a part of our promotion. So I wouldn't be shocked if the UFC tries to push those fights Paige VanZant's away. And it's going to be her management that's got to have the foresight to not take those fights.
Got to mention, Manny Bermudez, you got to think his UFC days are over after missing weight, moving up to 45 and getting submitted in the first round. You can't imagine. You know, I'd be kind of surprised the UFC gave him another fight. We'll mention Sean Woodson got a unanimous decision win over Kyle Bochniak. I'm talking to him later on today, so look for that later on this week on the MMAReport.com. You mentioned about Sean Brady going out there and getting a win. Randy Costa, a guy I've talked to in the past, got a TKOM. And Tanner Boser, who kicked off the fight card, UFC debut. I've had a chance to talk to him in the past. He gets a win as well. Anything else you want to mention about this card?
No, I think we nailed it, Jason. I think we got everything.
You know, quickly I mentioned, of course, PFL took place week two of the playoffs. It was the lightweights and featherweights. And Daniel, I was watching this fight card live, and I'm just admitted, I fell asleep on the couch.
Yeah, you said PFL, and I just fell asleep. I'm sorry. That car was boring. I mean, Lance Palmer's talented, Jason, but not particularly entertaining. I mean, like, Andre Harrison didn't even make it to the semifinals in the night.
Dude, got put to sleep.
Yeah, was crazy.
I think Alex Gilpin maybe landed four strikes in that fight. But, man, he put it – I mean, everything was going well for Andre Harrison. I mean, you know, look, I understand that in the PFL format, it is a format to play it safe. It is not a format to go out there and put on an entertaining fight. But Lance Palmer right now, like, as you said, very talented fighter. I'm not going out of my way to watch him because those two fights just were not entertaining fights to watch.
But if you're Lance Palmer, if the check clears, you fight that way. Yeah, because you're not putting yourself in any danger by laying and praying, and you're getting that $1 million.
Errol Wani had a really good comment, and I know some people may not like what he said, but, you know, basically one of the things saying is, you know, when you look at, you know, the fighters who have made their way to the finals, it's just a repeat of season one. And maybe we do need fresh blood. I think the other problem with PFL is you got to have more American fighters. You're a North American promotion. When the majority of your roster is outside North America, I think it's tough to succeed.
Well, I think that's just evident, like the Big Brother system they have. I mean, it's usually like they kind of have a Big Brother system where It's like, you know, all these fighters from this particular area or managed by this particular guy. Let's bring them all in. And
yep.
And that's just how it goes. And it's to the detriment of the PFL. You know, a lot of the best fighters on the planet are from Russia. So the cream is going to rise to the top. But they need to do a concerted effort to bring in more talented North American fighters because they're just way more marketable.
That particular manager should not be worrying about getting his fighters fights at this point. He should be worried about cleaning up his legal situation.
That's certainly true, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe not good to put when you get arrested or charged in a police the police report lists your address is not your actual home address. It's another address. So, yeah, that could be very interesting to see how that does play out there. But now it is time for the interview portion of this week's edition of the AmeriPort podcast. You're going to hear my conversation with Eric Anders, Maurice Green, and Lance Gibson Jr. Eric Anders is going to preview or recap his win at UFC Tampa against Gerald Merchart. Maurice Green, the Crochet Boss, is going to preview his fight on Saturday at UFC Singapore. And Lance Gibson Jr. is going to preview his fight on Saturday at Bellator 232. Joining me now here on the MMA Report, man, is coming off a victory at UFC Tampa against Gerald Merchart. It's your boy, Eric Anders. Eric, man, I appreciate the time. Obviously, a close fight. You know, and when we talked heading this fight, you knew Gerald's a vet of the sport. I mean, he's seen all the tricks there is out there. As the decision's being read, how confident are you?
Man, you know, you never know when it's a close fight like that, man. What it is they're looking at. They're looking at, like, the significance of the strikes, like, you know, how much damage they did, the volume of strikes. But I felt like that I won the first round. He won the second. And I feel like I won the third as well. So, in my mind, you know, like I said, you never know. So, I'm fairly confident that I had won the fight.
Watching your post-fight scrums, a couple of things you said that kind of really stuck out to me. You mentioned about failing to make adjustments. Anything you can kind of point to towards of why, now that a couple of days have passed, of why you just couldn't make those adjustments?
Man, you know, he had like a weird timing. It was hard to find a rhythm with him. And so, you know, all he did was throw ones and twos. And a couple body kicks. You know, he really didn't do anything spectacular. I thought that he'd be, he would look for more takedown attempts, but he only looked for the one. And just a lot of stuff going on in there.
You also mentioned about there's some things you need to tighten up on. Is that something that was more of a realization of how the fight unfolded? Or is that something leading into the fight you already kind of had that feeling?
I kind of take each fight, you know, by themselves and try to adjust what I could do better. And one thing is, you know, he hit me a lot, especially in that second round. So definitely need to tighten up my defense and move my head a little bit more. Like I said, man, he's just it was really hard to get a rhythm going with him.
You know, one of the things during that scrum, it kind of felt like it was more of what you didn't do, you know, the more negatives as opposed to positive. And you mentioned, hey, I want my toughest critic. But what do you think you did best in the fight?
I just stayed in his face, kept the pressure, kept him moving back. I also think that kind of helped lead to the decision going my way. We didn't grapple a whole lot, but I feel like I controlled the pace of the fight. Kept him moving backwards the whole time and, landed more strikes.
I know you're always looking for that knockout. Was it kind of after the fight was over, you and the team are in the back, it's more frustration like that you couldn't find, you know, that combination that could have ended it?
To kind of disappointed with my overall performance, man. I probably got hit more times this fight than any other fight. You know, I dropped him in the first round and, you know, hindsight being 2020, man, maybe I should have jumped on him and tried to finish him with some ground and pound. But, man, I just remember thinking during the fight, you know, watching his previous fights, how good he is at playing possum and luring guys into the grappling exchanges, and they find themselves getting choked out. So, man, I just thought my best chances were on the feet, and that kind of, like, nullified half the game, you know. He's not threatened by takedowns, which kind of helps set up shots and things like that. So, you know, maybe I should have grappled a little bit more.
Third round, he caught you pretty good. You know, obviously watching it after the fact, it's like, man, you know, it was one of those things of just kind of like, hey, he caught me good, but, you know, I got my wits right back with me immediately.
Yeah, man, it was more by surprise than it was like powers. The ones that you don't see coming are the ones that kind of rock you a little bit. You know, equilibrium was a little unbalanced for a split second, but I was able to regain my wits. And, you know, not like, it's not like it hurt or did a lot of damage. He sent me in the right spot when I wasn't expecting it. And it kind of, you know, made the legs go a little rubbery for a second.
But you go out there, you get the win. I know you mentioned about, you know, potentially washing DC, that fight night card. Is kind of a card you're targeting. Is that kind of still the plan? Or now that a couple of days have passed, maybe you and the team have said, hey, maybe we're maybe looking more like January?
Yeah, realistically, man, we're probably looking at the beginning of next year. Like I said, I took a lot, got hit a lot in that fight. So, man, I want to heal and be 100%. It's been a long time since I've been 100%. So, you know, we're going to take some time off. You know, had a decent year this year. Two fight win streak, and man, just want to be 100% for the next one.
How would you classify 2019 in terms of your fighting career?
Did certainly turn things around. You know, we got off to a bad start with that Roundtree fight in April, but turned around, got a performance bonus, and then a performance bonus and a knockout win, and then, you know, edged out another victory just last week. So, you know, it's an okay year, man. That one loss kind of leaves a bad taste in my mouth, but at the same time, ended a three-fight losing streak and started a winning streak. So, you know, that's always good.
I know when we talked before the fight, I know you're going overseas, you and your wife, and she's doing some competing. You know, kind of, have you gone out and got that big jacket yet?
Not yet. I mean, I've been looking at the weather, man. It's not too far. It's far too different from here in Birmingham. It's about the same, actually, so... Man, I might just get by with the hoodie. We'll see what happens when we get off the plane.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised I got the line. It was kind of a little chilly, and I'm like, oh, I didn't really pack too many cold weather gear. Yeah. I'm just not used to it. It's like outside here in Tampa, I think it's like we're probably in the 80s, 70s, and 80, you know, high 70s, low 80s type thing. We're finally getting out of that 90-degree weather.
Yeah, y'all are spoiled by the weather, man. Y'all get that little 3 o'clock drizzle, and then the rest of the day it's sunshine and warmth.
Yeah, you were just here during a good week. You didn't have, like, that really severe thunderstorm 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And but, you know, I know one of the guys that you're both represented by the same management company, you know, Thomas Gifford. We saw what happened there. Has that ever been a conversation between you and your coach Chris about, you know, if things aren't going right, of whether he would ever stop the fight? Because I know as a fighter, you're like, hey, I want to keep fighting. I want to keep going. But is that a conversation that you and Chris have had in the past?
Yeah, not like seriously, but not like a serious conversation, you know. But I did tell him, and I was, you know, serious about it. Like, if he ever threw in the towel, then, you know, I can't fight for him no more. Just because, you know, if I'm going to go out, let me go out on my shield, man. You know, and that, you know, that's just the way I feel. You know, that's just the warrior in me. So whether that's the right or wrong answer, you know, that's my answer. So I've definitely told him that in the past, and you know, I don't think we've ever been in a situation. I think the Roundtree fight was you know, maybe not Chris or, you know, Mark Montoya was in my corner for that one too, maybe not one of them stopping the fight, but the doctor definitely came in after that second round, after I got knocked down four times, and was asking me some questions. So I think that that's probably the closest I've ever been to a, you know, the fight getting stopped because I was taking too much damage.
Yeah, I think the way you feel is probably the way a majority of fighters feel, where it's like, hey, let me go out on my own shield. I mean, I look back at that Thomas Gifford fight. I kind of look at the referee at some point. You know, the referee is supposed to be that third man in there. But I just thought it was kind of interesting from your perspective of, you know, if that conversation does take place. I mean, is that more of something, maybe it's a conversation between fighters of, you know, has, you know, hey, you saw it happen, how will we handle that?
I mean, that's my answer regardless of who the audience is, you know. That's just the way I am now, would I appreciate it, you know, if I'm just getting, you know, bamboozled in there? Maybe in time, but I know my knee-jerk reaction is I'd be upset that they win the towel.
So when the next fight does take place, 85?
Man, whatever they give me, man, 85, 205, you know, I really enjoy my job. So, you know, if they offer me a 205 fight, but I have a feeling they're going to let me stay at 85 for a while. So it most likely be a middleweight fight.
You mentioned about, you know, hey, I got to heal some things up. But in the back of your mind, is it like, hey, you know, I know some fights are going to fall out. You know, they know who to call.
They know who to call, man. But like I said, I got some healing to do. So I think if they called me for a fight before December, then I'd have to decline.
But of course, we look forward to seeing when that fight does take place. Eric, man, as always, appreciate time. Of course, let everyone know they follow on social media. And of course, the sponsors that are helping out, man.
Now, you guys can get at me at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Eric Anders. Shout out to Reliable Septic, Infinite CBD, Magic Box Conversation Club, and Rev Gear, of course.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man's going to take that long trek over to Singapore. Let's go to 5-0 in the UFC. It is Maurice Cream. Maurice, appreciate the time. Obviously, things have gone well for you in your stint here in the UFC, but were you hoping for a little bit of a bigger name in this fight than Sergey?
To be honest with you, man, I mean, I was hoping for a top 15 fight, and it's a top 15 fight, you know. I moved into 15. You know, there was some shifts with some wins and losses. Moved me down to 13. Sergey moved into 14. I'm fighting a ranked guy. You know, now after this, you know, looking to go 4-0 after this for the fifth fight, I'm looking to crack that top 10, fight somebody in the top 10. But, you know, I really can't ask for much more. You know, the UFC, they've been good to me. You know, this is my fourth fight in less than a year, pretty much. I made my debut November 30th of last year. I'm making my fourth outing. The winner of the Ultimate Fighter hasn't even fought since the finale. So, I'm just gracious that, you know, I'm grateful to the UFC that, you know, I was able to get called upon more than once.
One of the things Ed was mentioning to me was you recently became a CBD user and you swear by it. And I'm a big CBD user as well. I take a drop every night before I go to bed. What kind of what led you to venture to try CBD? Was it about a physical recovery or is there a particular reason?
Man, just bumps and bruises, man. You always got bumps and bruises. Like, for instance, my coach, Brock Larson, he probably does just as good of a job as any other massage therapist that you would go to for deep tissue. So, you know, he actually, before practice, just used this. Oh, you can't see it. Balance CBD.
Okay.
One of my sponsors to, you know, massage and kind of break up the little bumps and bruises I had. You know, in addition to the drops and sleeping, and, you know, it's not something you see like right away, but you start to notice over time. So I continue to use it, and it's helping me recover, man. In addition to the active recovery things that we do as well.
I'll tell you, I use a roll-on like cream thing when because I have my back will act up on me once in a while. Like I've done the Ben Gaze of the world and the Icy Hots. CBD is by far the best thing I've ever used when my back flares up on me.
Absolutely. I mean, you ask my coach, my jiu-jitsu coach, Brock Larson, his elbow locks, right? So it locks like this. He uses CBD on his elbow. He uses this Balanced CBD on his elbow. Same company that I use as well. And, you know, he's able to stretch his elbow all the way out. So, I mean, I'm not sure. I don't know the logistics of it, but hey, it works and it works well.
Yeah, it's and a lot of athletes are choosing to use it now. But, you know, one of the things when I was looking at this fight, one of the things that kind of jumped out to me was the reach in this matchup. You're 80.5 and has him at 84. Is it something that we put too much emphasis on?
I don't care about his reach, really. It is what it is. He still has to know how to use it effectively. I guess we'll see October 26th. You know, of course, I'm aware of it. I got something for it, and we'll see who does it better, you know? I'm not saying he can't do it, but, you know, it's something that I can't sit there and worry about his reach, because that's going to make me gun shy. Mm-hmm. I got contracted to do a job. The job is to go out there and put on a show for all those fans that pay good money to sit in those seats and watch us fight. So, you know, we're going to fight. We're going to fight. And if he wants to use his reach, well, we're going to get inside of that reach. I like playing the inside game. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. And usually I never get to do it because my coach is always like, be long. You're longer. Well, I'm not longer. And you got to remember, he has to punch up. You know, he's going to be punching up to hit me. So he's going to lose a little bit of that reach. We're probably virtually the same, to be honest with you. So, I mean, I could be wrong. You know, it's all speculation at this point. But we'll see. We'll see who comes out better or who uses it better October 26th, man. You know, this is not an easy fight. Like you said, a bigger name. No, Sergey's a pretty big name. You know, he lost to Alistair Overeem. He's coming off a TKO win. I'm coming off a TKO win. You know, when he came into UFC, the UFC was big, pretty high on him. He's 13, 12-0. You know, he's 13-1 right now. And, you know, it's my job to go put his ass away. And I'm sure he's going to be trying to do the same to me.
This now being your second training camp at Factory X, how is the training camp different this time as opposed to, you know, those first couple weeks there?
Took it a little more seriously. I mean, you can see the difference in my body and, you know, taking my supplements like I'm supposed to and eating my trifectas, eating the right meals. You know, I don't got to cut weight, but it's one thing to come in at 260, a little flabby, versus coming in at 245, solid, you know. So I feel better than I did my last camp, and, you know, I'm just going to go out and have fun. You know, me in the locker room is dancing, singing, you know. You flip that switch once you make that walk, man. Once I make that walk, everything changes. You know, I'm fighting for this one right here and that little girl sitting back there. This is why we do it, you know. So they cannot have to want for anything when they get older, you know. I'm sick of slaving for the man. I want to slave for myself.
Obviously, family is number one motivation for you. What would be the number two motivation? Is it simple personal pride of going out there?
Money. Give me all that. Dollars make sense. So I'm trying to make all this shit make sense. I want that money, honey. I mean, that's just the long and short of it. I enjoy what I did. Like I tell people, this wasn't something I got in because I've always wanted to be in the UFC. And fight. No, I fell into the sport. I'm good at what I do. And, you know, I found a love for it. My first love is jiu-jitsu now, you know. Mm-hmm. Since I fell into the sport, my love is jiu-jitsu. And, you know, as much as I can, I'm in my gi. I got one of the best coaches, jiu-jitsu coaches in the game, in Brock Larson. Our lineage is so damn strong with our head jiu-jitsu instructor being Gordinho, Professor Lima. And we do Gordo BJJ, that's his brother. So, and they're two guys from Brazil that are highly respected. So I can't be, you know, I get taken down and I start doing my work on the ground. You know, I'm representing all of them. So jiu-jitsu is where it's at. You know, for me, a lot of guys think, well, he's a striker. Let's take him down. Go ahead. If that's what you really want to do, you can go ahead and try it.
Yeah, we've seen you on the ground. It seems like the triangle from bottom is one of the go-to moves. Is that your favorite thing to work on when you are working on your ground submissions?
Yeah, I mean, it's no secret. Any sort of triangle is in my shit. That doesn't mean I can't do anything else, you know. They damn near can call me TC2, Triangle City 2, you know, because anytime I'm on my back, I'm going to go for it. Yeah, you're going to defend it. I got something for that. I expect you to defend the first one. It's not the first one you get, it's the second one or the third one. So, you know, I'm really good at transitional BJJ and kind of stringing things together. And, you know, I'm just getting out of the gym right now doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So it never stops for me. That's what I love to do, really.
Yeah, I was, as you were talking there, I was kind of thinking of Ovince St. Preux, where he – it seems like he just baits people, and I guess we just call it the Von Prue choke at this point by the amount of times he's done it. Is that one of the things that you're working on is how can I basically bait someone on the ground to do what I want them to do?
Yeah, that's the key in jiu-jitsu, right? You're trying to figure out, like, if I do one thing, right? I know if you react this way, I expect you to, but if you don't, I'll finish the choke, right? So yeah. If you react how I react, I'm automatically going to go to plan B, right? If you react to plan B like I think you're going to, I'm going to go to plan C, right? And then we're going to come all the way back to plan A because they're all strung together. You know, it's like a triangle, armbar, omoplata kind of setup. Those all go together, you know? So, I mean, it's nothing for me, you know? And then my wrestling's getting better. My striking's getting better. You know, my MMA IQ's growing being at Factory X. And, you know, that's another key part of my game, going to Factory X and working with Mark Montoya, Coach G, you know, watching all the other guys that are in the UFC and not in the UFC. You know, I pick up things from brand new amateurs, seasoned amateurs, new pros, seasoned pros. Chris Camozzi is a seasoned vet, 25 UFC vet, I think he is, something like that. So, you know, I'm always picking things up. That's why it's hard for guys to train for me. I mean, they could think they got the drop on me, right? But they'll never have the drop on me because I'm always improving. I'm always putting my game to the test. And I'll never look the same each fight. I mean, you can see my stint in the UFC, how I came in. And then I got the short notice fight, and I was fat. And I come back in Minneapolis, and now I'm about to bust the ass in the head with this performance. So hopefully I'll get a performance bonus, hopefully a third time's a charm. I felt like I should have won two of them, or I should have won one of two, and I didn't. Mm-hmm. So hopefully the third time's a charm, man. Hopefully the UFC knows that the Crochet Boss is here to stay, and I'm rising right to the top.
And, of course, we look forward to seeing this fight here, UFC Singapore, on October the 26th. Good luck in your travels over there to Singapore. I know it's a long flight, but Maurice, as always, man, I appreciate the time. Of course, let me know anything for you on social media and those sponsors that are helping you out, man.
Hey, shout out to my CBD sponsor. I showed you earlier, Balance CBD, Balance Naturals. They keep me right. Not really one of my sponsors, but they do send me stuff from time to time. Shout out D-Throne. My son's rocking the D-Throne. He out here. We out here, cuz. Social media, man, it's easy to find me. There's only one of me. I'm the Crochet Boss. The Crochet Boss on Instagram, Twitter, and the Crochet Boss fan page on Facebook. You may want to, if you don't follow the journey, you may want to follow the journey. It's about to get pretty serious.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, man's going to make his Bellator debut coming up on Saturday night, October 26th. Bellator 232, it's Lance Gibson Jr. Lance, man, I appreciate time. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How are you, man?
I'm doing very good. You know, obviously people see your name. They know who your father is. They know, you know, who your stepmother is. But what would you want people to think of when they hear your name?
When they hear my name, I want them to think of an exciting fighter, somebody that's in there to do business, somebody that's a professional, and one of the best mixed martial artists in the world.
I was reading an article that was just about you and your entire family, and you talked about, you know, how, you know, you as long as you can remember, you were at the gym with your dad. What's the earliest moment you have of being in the gym?
So I think I was either two or three, which is kind of weird that I remember it, but we were at AMC Pancration in Kirkland, Washington, where my dad originally started training. And I remember being on the mats, just doing cartwheels, doing animal exercises on the mats, doing push-ups, all that stuff. And when my dad first opened his gym in 1997, I was training at the age of two. I remember hitting pads. I was doing arm bars. I was doing triangle chokes. I was shooting double legs. I was doing it all. So a lot of people ask me what my discipline is. My discipline is mixed martial arts at the end of the day. So I have a very long memory of the sport.
What was the age when you realized, like, okay, I'm going to follow in my dad's footsteps?
You know, I feel like I not necessarily going to follow in his footsteps. I'm just going to continue his footsteps. He's Lance Kitson Sr. His career ended at a different time, obviously. Yeah, he focused on coaching. He focused on acting and stunt work. And I'm just continuing his footsteps. So he's dedicated his life to building me as a mixed martial artist, and I'm just going to continue that. This is all a legacy, and I can't wait for the world to see our legacy being shown.
What would you say is the biggest lesson you've taken from him in your mixed martial arts career? Is there something that you just remember him telling you that kind of sticks with you every day, you know, when you're in the training room?
Yeah, absolutely. There's one that I preach to my students every day because, you know, mixed martial arts is anytime you come in daily. So I'm teaching my students, and you got 4, 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, and I'm trying to teach them how to throw with an intention. So whatever they're throwing, whatever they're doing in the sport has to have an intention. What's your intention? So if you're doing this for self-defense, if a bully was attacking you, what is your intention? Is your intention to get the bully off, or is your intention to say, to throw a sloppy punch at them, right? So my father's always taught me since I was a young kid. I think I was probably 6 or 7. Always strike with intention. Do everything with intention. And my intention is to, in the sport of mixed martial arts, is to finish my opponent. So every strike you see has heat on it, and it's with precision and accuracy and timing, and it's there to finish my opponent.
I mentioned that article that I read about you, and one of the quotes in that article that you said is, "I feel I was born to do this." Has there ever been have you ever thought about what you would be doing if it wasn't martial arts?
You know, I mentioned it earlier, but my mom, Tisha Flowers, she always used to say, "Be who you want to be, Lancey." She would always say, "Be what you're destined to be. Don't do what your dad did just because he did it. That's not what you're meant to do, right?" So it would always be a constant search for me since the age of 12 to find what I was destined to do. I have many different interests. Everything I do, I pour my whole heart in. I'm a fisherman, but throughout my life, I've always looked at naturopathic medicine. So I was originally going to school to become a nutritionist at Arizona State University. I was going to become a naturopathic doctor, but over time, I wanted to dedicate my whole life to mixed martial arts. I realized how much I loved teaching kids and passing on my knowledge to the next generation, and obviously competing in the sport of mixed martial arts to show the world what I'm capable of.
I noticed when I was on your Instagram feed, there was a lot of fishing pictures on there. You mentioned about your girlfriend. Yeah. Is that the thing that, you know, I've talked to so many fighters just say, you know, you got to have like an activity that, just a hobby that gets your mind off the fight game. Is that what fishing is for you?
Absolutely. It's definitely a meditation to me. I've done it since I was like 4 years old. My grandpa, Ron Gibson, had taught me how to fish, and I love it. It's honestly so relaxing, but it's also, it's similar. I can compare it because I have I think in an elaborate way, but I think of it like a fight, basically. So when you get I'm fishing for Chinook salmon out in my waters in British Columbia, but the Chinook salmon they're massive and they're extremely powerful. And honestly, when you hook one, you don't know if you're going to get it in the boat or not. So it's that stress level, that anxiety level, that fight that I crave it. So it's something that's really, really exciting to me. And it's definitely a science. So it's awesome. I'm out there every Sunday with my dad and Julia as well sometimes, and when we can force her to go outside to get out on the water, even though it's raining or snowing. But yeah, it's awesome. It's great meditation for sure.
Is there a favorite type of fish you like to try to go catch?
Absolutely. Chinook salmon are the most powerful, and my grandpa caught one that was about 52 pounds just a couple years ago. It's massive. That's like a record in Vancouver. But yeah, they're such powerful fish, and they're beautiful, and they taste fantastic. It's nothing better than being able to eat fresh fish your entire fight camp. Like, it's awesome. So yeah, I can it, I smoke it, I fillet all my fish, I vacuum pack it, and yeah, so we eat it about three times a week.
But of course, you got the fight here coming up on the 26th. Dominic Jones, yeah. 2-2 in his career. But you know, one of the things that kind of really jumped out to me when I was on the Bellator website was the height difference and the fact that you've got a notable height advantage in this fight. And I know a lot of people look at that and they're going to say, "Oh man, that's a big advantage for Lance here." Do you? Is that something that we overblown? And it's not as big of an advantage as we think it is.
I don't even think anybody should look at the height advantage. I think they should definitely look at my skill advantage that I have, my also experience advantage. Nobody knows that yet. That's kind of my like little secret that I have is I've had 22 years of experience in the sport. I can count my entire 24 years on this earth as 24 years of experience. Cause when I was in the womb, when I was in a car seat, my dad was taking me back and forth from his practices every day. So, but at the end of the day, yes, my height advantage will help me for sure. But I think my skill advantage will definitely be the huge factor in that game.
What do you see as your key to victory in the fight?
I see anything. So realistically, what people don't really know about me just yet, they'll see on the 26th, is I'm extremely well-rounded. I showcase what I want to showcase. So I go in there and I put the fight where I want it to be. I can strike very good. I can clinch. I can fight in the clinch really well. I can wrestle and I can grapple really well on the ground. So wherever this fight goes, I can finish it at any point in time. That's what I believe.
Heading into this fight, is there anything you want the Bellator fan to know about you?
The Bellator fans should know that I'm a humble, confident though, humble but confident, great person out, and I plan to showcase the world what I have. I want to speak for those that don't really have a voice, and I want to go in there and be able to show the world that you can do anything. And realistically, if you dedicate your life to it, which I've dedicated my entire life to the sport, you can be something great.
And, of course, this fight's going to be a part of preliminary card Bellator 232. Of course, you can watch that on the Bellator app. And DAZN on Saturday night, October the 26th, live from the Mohegan Sun. Lance, I appreciate the time. Of course, let everyone know anything. Follow you on social media. If there's any sponsor you want to shout out, the floor is yours, man.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. First of all, I'd like to thank all the fans that are listening and all my fans, old and new. I'd like to thank my family, the Flowers family in the States. Gibson family, Julia Budd, my training partner and four-time world champion in Bellator, my father, Lance Gibson Sr., all my training partners at Gibson MMA, my sponsors, Strike Recovery and Performance, Ali and Bernard, they're fantastic. They make sure that we're all set up for our fights. Our bodies are in perfectly fine-tuned machines, and we're in shape to fight, as well as one of my other sponsors, Apollo Sheet Metal. Angelo at Apollo Sheet Metal, he's awesome. He basically takes care of me for anything that I need throughout my fight. I had to get a brain MRI for this fight, and he took care of that no problem. Any equipment that I need, he's got my back. So he's awesome at Paul Sheet Metal. And lastly, Roots of Fight, Jesse Katz. Those guys are awesome. The clothing company, check them out. It's worn by literally famous celebrities. Luke Cage, Beyonce, all those guys. And beautiful clothes. I love it. And I love to promote them. So, yeah. Thank you.
And there was my conversations with Eric Anders, Maurice Greed, and Lance Gibson Jr. I appreciate all those fighters coming on this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, as I do have a bunch of content coming up this week on the MMAReport.com, also on the MMA Report YouTube channel, so be sure to subscribe to the MMA Report on YouTube. Also, we'll note a new show that I'll be doing with Pete Rogers Jr. will debut later on this week. It's going to be called Bring the Heat, where we're going to get a fighter's perspective on some of the notable topics going on in mixed martial arts. Episode 1, which will drop later on this week, will probably be either probably on Friday it's going to drop, will be about why corners do not throw the towel in MMA in comparison to what we see in boxing. Episode 2 is going to be about weight cutting and particularly what's going on with the state of California. It's going to be very interesting to get a fighter's perspective on that. But, Daniel, we've got a busy weekend with the Bellator and UFC. Of course, Bellator's got a pair of events in Connecticut and the UFC over in Singapore. And let's just start off with this question, Daniel. You can only watch one of these fight cards this weekend. Which card do you pick? To me, it's an easy answer.
Look, man, I'm going to have to pick Bellator 232. And it's all about watching one fight.
Exactly. I'm with you.
It's it. It's all about watching one fight. And it's Roy Madonna and Douglas Lima. A lot of these cards are really top heavy. They have one or two fights I really want to watch. I think Bellator 231 has more fights that I'm interested in throughout the fight card. But and then the UFC card is Maya Askren's great. Johnson Ray is fine. Camacho Dariush, also looking forward to that. The rest of that, don't really care too much. So moral of the story, Bellator 232 is the card I'm picking because Roy McDonald and Douglas Lima is the best fight of the weekend.
Oh, and it's not even close. I mean, I'm with you. It's Bellator 232. Of course, that event's on DAZN. That fight card has gone through a couple of changes this week. Of course, Paul Daly was originally supposed to take on Sabah Hamasi, but Sabah pulled out of the fight. And Syed Awad, he's pretty much the Donald Cerrone of the UFC. Just call him. He's ready to fight. He'll fight Paul Daly at 175-pound contract weight. That'll be the co-main event of the fight card. There was supposed to be a heavyweight matchup between Vitaly Minnikov and your boy, Javi Ayala. This is now the second time this fight's been booked, and the second time it's now been canceled, as reportedly Vitaly Minnikov had visa issues, unable to get into the United States, so this fight is delayed. You know, you look at, you know, I'm interested in, you know, you just heard from Lance Gibson Jr. I'm kind of interested to kind of see how he looks. Devin Powell, who I've got an interview on the MMAreport.com with him. You know, first fight since exiting the UFC. Kind of a fascinating conversation talking about the injuries that he had and, you know, kind of the issues that he had leading up to that last fight in the UFC. Nick Newell. I'm actually kind of surprised they didn't put Nick Newell on the Friday card to have that on Paramount, maybe to push some of the television ratings. But, of course, Nick now under a multi-fight deal with Bellator. You know, so that's what kind of really Patty Mix, another one that sticks out to you about there. Also, John Duma's fighting on that card, taking on Jornel Lugo. I've got an interview with John Duma up on the MMAreport.com. I would tell you, outside of the McDonald Lima Maya Askren fight, the fight that may have me the most interested is Ed Ruth versus Jason Jackson, which will be on Bellator 231 on Friday.
Yeah, that fight to me really stuck out to me as well. And it did make my top five. It was really easy to go with McDonald Lima, Maya Askren as your top two. Both really compelling welterweight matchups. And then when you start to look at the Bellator card, the more you inspect Bellator 231, the more you like. I mean, definitely me or Roy Nelson, not a fight I care for at all. It's just two guys who are really past their prime and really not doing too well. They just have name value because they're former UFC fighters. But Ed Ruth and Jason Jackson is a great fight. Ed Ruth is a fighter who Bellator really has had bookmarked for a long time due to his wrestling background. And we've seen him thrown to the fires den lately, and he's taken on a guy coming off we've seen him in the Contender Series. After that, he's had success outside of that. And Jason Jackson, this is just a really compelling fight of two up-and-coming welterweights, and it's likely that both guys will be a part of the Bellator welterweight picture, regardless of who wins and loses. So, like, that fight's a part of my top five fights you got to watch. And then one fight that barely didn't make it was Phil Davis versus Carl Albrechtsen. Just because I'm interested to see Carl Albrechtsen fight. I mean, Albrechtsen's lost lately. The one loss he has lately is to a guy, Jiří Procházka, who looks really good at the latest Ryzen event. And Jiří Procházka is a guy you got to expect in Bellator, and he's probably going to have a lot of success in the light heavyweight division. But Carl's got a good look. I think he's probably going to go out there and get manhandled by Davis with the wrestling. But that fight interests me, Jason. And then you also got Jake Hager, who I'm really looking forward to see fight. Obviously, been watching him in All Elite Wrestling. Hell, I just saw freaking Ken Shamrock wrestle an Impact Wrestling on pay-per-view. So the wrestling MMA it is just constant. But Ruth Jackson would definitely be in my top five fights, Jason.
You know, when you talk about Frank Mir, Roy Nelson, I remember being there for their first fight back at UFC 130. And it was not a great fight. I was actually kind of surprised Bellator went this route. You look at Frank Mir, 2-8 in his last 10, 4-10 for Roy Nelson in his last 14 fights. Roy only has one win in Bellator. That was his promotional debut against Javi Ayala. Since that fight, losing to Mitrione Kharitonov and Mirko Krokop. You have to imagine whoever loses this one, Bellator will get out of that business. Of course, we haven't seen Frank Mir since the end of 2018 when, he submitted to the punches with the jaw injury. And I honestly thought that would have been the last time we would have seen Frank Mir. I thought that his time was going to be over. But yeah, I like that Phil Davis matchup. Jake Hager, Anthony Garrett. I've had a chance to interview Anthony Garrett a couple times. He fought primarily Shamrock FC, which of course everyone knows. They're the owner of Shamrock FC, Jesse Finney's got a great relationship with Scott Coker. So that's kind of basically how Anthony Garrett got this fight. And there was an article on MMA Junkie. I don't know if it was the end of last week or beginning of this week, and it was about Aaron Chalmers wanting to fight Jake Hager on the Bellator Ryzen show. So I'm reading this article, Daniel, and for the writer of that article, you really should pick up the phone and find out that, this event is being regulated. Yeah, there's no chance this fight will ever happen. It was one of the dumbest articles I've ever seen. I'm just like, their perception was, it's Japan. It's not regulated. Yeah, it's going to be regulated, folks. It's going to be regulated by Mike Mazzulli because he regulates all the Bellator MMA international events. I read the article and I'm just like, oh my God. I'm like, this is fake news, folks. Fake news. Just pick up the phone.
Yeah, it's impossible to happen.
Yeah, that fight would never. Yeah. And first off, why would Bellator book it? Why would Scott Coker book that? Let's have some common sense here.
Yeah, Hager on top of Chalmers raining down ground and pound strikes would be dangerous. And that's stupid. Not much more to be said by that other than do your homework and chill out. It's like, damn. The other Bellator fight that I have that I'm really looking forward to is Paul Daly and Syed Awad. I think that's going to be exciting, yeah. Jason. So that's all that rounds out my top five in terms of like the only other fight I got that I have in my top five is Benil Dariush and Frank Camacho.
I'll give you a very
from the UFC card.
I'll give you a very under the radar fight for Bellator 231.
Which fight?
Mando Nello versus Kiles Mota on the preliminary card. That's a fight that if you're going to watch the preliminary card, watch that fight. That should be a good fight. I like Dalton Rosta versus, here's the honest story. So I was interviewing Dalton Rosta last week, but unfortunately had issues with Skype. So it was basically, I was having this problem where the call was canceled, was just stopped, dropping out after 3 minutes. And it got off to a really great start. I'll tell you that. We were talking about him honoring his father who passed away a couple of years ago. So he is a guy to pay attention to, someone that Bellator has signed to a long-term promotional agreement. They signed him, for his first pro fight. That's someone to pay attention to. Steve Mowry, see if he can stay undefeated. He's taking on an undefeated fighter. Talita Nogueira, coming back to Bellator after her loss against Julia Budd. That would be interesting there. Mentioned Tim Caron. He's taking on Lucas Pimenta. This is Lucas Pimenta's first fight in 7 years, Daniel. And I asked Tim, I go, how do you prepare for a guy that hasn't fought in 7 years? He's like, it is what it is. So that really sticks out to me. Another name on that Bellator 231 card I think people will recognize is John Manley. And we've pretty much mentioned all the fights on Bellator 232. When it comes to UFC Singapore, very early start on Saturday morning. If you're going to watch this, 5 a.m. Eastern time is a preliminary card, 8 a.m. Eastern time for that main card. And obviously, it's about Damian Maia and Ben Askren. And when I look at this fight, Daniel, to me, it's like Ben Askren has everything to lose. I don't know how much Damian Maia really has to lose, with the exception of a loss going on his record. This fight means so much more for Ben Askren of how does he bounce back.
Yeah, it's a fight where if he loses two in a row, then we're talking about a long road back for Ben Askren, who just got demolished in his last fight. I mean, the good thing is he doesn't have to worry about getting knocked out in 15 seconds against Damian Maia. He can sleep easy, you know. The UFC didn't, like, screw him over and then put him in his next fight against, like, Leon Edwards or Ponzinibbio or hell, even Stephen Thompson. I mean, they gave him a guy in Maia who isn't going to shatter his jaw. Mm-hmm. It's a tough matchup for Askren because when he takes down Damian Maia, well, Damian Maya's like, all right, let's play the grappling game. Like, this is a very fascinating matchup. I mean, Maia literally has, like, dreams about fights only playing out on the ground. And that's where I expect this to happen because I think Maya's probably the better striker of the two, slightly. I mean, Maya's shown more improvement throughout his career in stand-up versus Askren, but who knows? It's not like either guy's going to win a K-1 Grand Prix anytime soon. So I'm looking forward to it. I think Askren positionally is going to stay out of trouble and not get tapped out. But look, Damian Maia is one of the most dangerous grapplers in the damn sport.
Well, let's look at his last three losses for Damian Maia. They all have one common characteristic. Kamaru Usman, Colby Covington, Tyron Woodley.
They've all stated that submission, and they've used their wrestling.
They're all strong wrestlers, strong wrestling base. I mean, it's, you know, look, my pick is Ben Askren to win the fight. I wouldn't say I feel confident in it.
Yeah, yeah. You got to think about what his where his head is at after that loss.
And also, if this ends up being a 25-minute fight on the feet, I don't think it's going to be very exciting.
No, it'll be like two fish kind of flopping.
Yeah, that's clearly, you know, you mentioned about some of the other fights, you know, Michael Johnson, Stevie Ray, Michael Johnson back up at 155, Frank Camacho. Look, I don't think Frank knows how to have a boring fight. He may not always win, but he's going to go out there and bring the fight to his opponent. He's obviously got to stay away from the ground. Cyril Gagne and Dontel Mays. Gagne is definitely someone to pay attention there in the heavyweight division. You heard from Maurice Green earlier on the show. Interesting to see him. You know, the Ronda Marcos Ashley Yoder fight is kind of an interesting women's fight. You can kind of with you know in that division.
It is. It is absolutely. I mean, Ronda Marcos is a fighter who's just up and down so often. It's crazy. She does a lot of things well. But the one thing she's not been able to do well is put together back-to-back victories. She's kind of like the female Ross Pearson, where it's win-loss, win-loss, win-loss. Mm-hmm. Against Ashley Yoder, though, I would expect a victory here. It's a good fight. I mean, there are quite a few things here. I mean, the reason why Camacho Darius is in my top five is because of the potential that might be the best fight of the whole weekend in terms of like in-cage excitement. You mentioned Cyril Gagne. I mean, the other heavyweight is Sergey Pavlovich going up against Maurice Green to keep an eye on. And then the welterweight contest between Muslim Salikov and Laureano Stiropoli is pretty good too. But overall, this card is relatively weak. I can't blame you if you miss it or only watch the main event, essentially.
So, technically, the last time that Ronda Marcos won back-to-back fights was the Ultimate Fighter reality show, where she got a decision win over Tisha Torres and a submission – or a decision win over Torres and submission win against Felice Herrigan. She was submitted by Rose Namajunas. But when you talk about her official fights, the last time she won back-to-back fights was – when she started 3-0 in her career, all those fights outside of the UFC. Since coming to the UFC, loss, win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, draw, win, loss. So I guess she's due for a win.
Due for a win here for Ronda Marcos for sure. Yeah.
And that probably has a 15-minute decision written all over it.
Definitely. Absolutely.
But yeah, that'll be UFC Singapore. Bellator 231, Bellator 232. So plenty of mixed martial arts action to take in this weekend. But, you know, we wanted to finish off this week's podcast by talking about the Chuck and Tito 30 for 30 documentary. I watched it earlier this week. It debuted last week on ESPN. It's on ESPN Plus commercial free, which makes things really nice. It was an hour and I want to say an hour and 17 minutes was how long the documentary was. I enjoyed it, Daniel. I thought the filmmaker did a very good job of making a MMA documentary that if you were not a fan of mixed martial arts, you could kind of understand the background story, but also telling a story that for someone who follows MMA on the daily is also an interesting story. I thought they accomplished both aspects of that.
Yeah, I had the same feeling watching this 30 for 30 that I did watching the Ric Flair one, which is like, damn, I could watch like 50 more 30 for 30s about MMA topics. It was just fun to sit down, watch a really well-made documentary about a story we've heard before, reveals new information, a lot of cool footage, really appreciated the early career stuff out of these guys that you saw that I've never seen before. That was just really cool. My favorite part of the 30 for 30 was painting the picture of who these guys were before they made it big time. You know, the Tito Tank stuff was great.
Yeah.
I just really loved it. And they even went there, man. Like, the scene with Jenna Jameson's, like, the surveillance camera is crazy.
that is
absolutely psycho.
So the first half of this, I felt that it was very one-sided towards Chuck. In terms of they were really putting over Chuck Liddell for the first half of it. And then where I thought it really takes a turn is the part where, you know, if for people who haven't watched it, so basically every time they kind of the story transitions, it brings up like a black screen with like a chapter title essentially. And it was called, I want to say it was called Sins of a Father. And I had never heard the story of Chuck Liddell's biological father. And he tells us, you know, that they play this video of Chuck's mom and stepdad and kind of talking about Chuck's upbringing. And then Chuck tells a story about his biological father basically coming up to him as he was becoming a star, and basically where Chuck loses it on him, where, you know, his biological father says, well, you only know your mother's side of the story. And Chuck goes, oh, you mean the woman that, you know, raised me, you know, and you weren't around, and all of a sudden you're around now. So that was something that stuck out to me, you know. And of course, you mentioned about the, you know, the Tito Jenna stuff. And then they also talk about, you know, Chuck's, you know, alcohol problem that he had. I mean, I think that's been very well documented. The other thing that jumped out to me was the very end of the documentary, Daniel, where they're talking about, you know, where the fighters are currently at. And obviously we know what's going on with Tito. And then it says with Chuck, Chuck undecided on his fighting future. WTF, Daniel.
Yeah, he better be decided. Look, I mean,
anyone who books Chuck Liddell for a fight, their promoter's life should be taken away. After what we saw, unfortunately, Daniel, you know who would give him a fight, right?
Yeah, you can say it.
Bare Knuckle FC. They would give him a fight. Yeah. Like, because I keep hearing that they are going to give Wanderlei Silva a fight, which I'm like, this is a guy who's come out and talked about his concussion symptoms, and you're going to give this guy a fight? Like, that's the part, like, I understand there is a niche for bare knuckle. But when you talk about people who want to throw daggers at bare knuckle, when you're sitting there and look, bare knuckle was here in my hometown of Tampa last week. I didn't go. I was at the Lightning game. But, like, I saw the highlight of Gabriel Gonzaga and Bigfoot. Not surprised. Like, why are people still giving Bigfoot Silva fights?
Yeah.
Does anybody care about this guy's well-being? He just keeps getting knocked out.
The answer is not really. It's all about the money, and that's going to be too
sad, advertising. It's sad.
Yeah, I mean, the Golden Boy fight should have never happened. It was an interesting end to the documentary to cover that, but it allowed them to get, you know, more modern footage and probably get their camera crews in there and stuff. So that was the positive for the Golden Boy fight. But I mean, dude's nearly 50 years old, and the way his career ended, where it was just his lights went out, it was clear, like, he couldn't fight anymore in 2010. And, you know, the idea of Chuck Liddell fighting in 2020, whether it be in MMA or bare knuckle boxing, is asinine and should absolutely not be allowed to happen.
Yeah, it's just overall I enjoyed it. But, you know, you brought this up of, you know, what other 30 for 30 MMA documentaries would we love to see? And I text you this. There are two that came to my mind immediately. One is a UFC buying Strikeforce, and the other would be the change in Bellator management from Bjorn Rebney and Scott Coker.
I love both those. Those are great ones. I would love to see Bjorn to Scott Coker, because there's probably a million crazy stories of Bjorn Rebney, Jason.
Well, there's that, and I think it's also there's things you've heard kind of how everything kind of played out with the roles people had and all aspects of that. I think you would never see that on ESPN because it's Bellator. I think another one would be is how the Reebok deal changed a sponsorship game for fighters in and out of the cage.
Yeah, the Reebok deal is absolutely a big one and just a momentum shifter. I mean, you could do a documentary about anything in MMA. I think it'd be interesting. Like, I think, you know, you could literally pick a fighter and it would be great. I mean, to me, a Randy Couture documentary would be awesome. The guy has a lot of stuff that I don't think's really been scratched on in a mainstream way. I think just recently he like found out who his biological father was or something like that. Like, that's crazy to me. So Randy Couture is, to me, is the third tent pole along with Liddell and Ortiz. And that would be a good documentary. I'd be down to see a Tank Abbott documentary. Like, it's kind of crazy. He was a kind of a phenomenon in the UFC for a short period of time. I would like to be taken down that road and remember what it was like to watch Tank Abbott kind of fight and be successful early on in the UFC. Evan Tanner, there's already a documentary on him. But his story is really compelling, given, you know, his passing. Mm-hmm. And then a couple other names. I think you kind of look towards guys that fought in Japan for most of their career, like Fedor Emelianenko would be quite the documentary. Vanderlei would be quite the documentary. You know, all those guys training in shootbox, you know, as much footage as you could obtain from there would certainly be interesting. But honestly, you could pick any topic, any fighter, and the documentary would be ripe with entertainment.
Here's another thought on what I watched with Chuck and Tito, and I had this just kind of watching this, is can the UFC create that type of rivalry?
Well,
you know, because I was thinking about this, like, you know, you think about, like, you know, the history of boxing, you know, we think of, like, these trilogy fights and we really just haven't really had that where, you know, high level, you know, I mean, you would love to sit here and say Conor and Khabib, but let's be honest about it. The chances of Conor McGregor beating Khabib Nurmagomedov at this point, less than 20%.
Mm-hmm.
And I might be shooting high on that one.
Well, I think you're right about that. And I think the answer is yes, they can. Dana White laid it out to start the documentary. The first line he said was the way you create a fight is three things: conflict, storyline, and how to tell us and telling, being able to tell a story. Now, the biggest issue for the UFC is not conflict and it's not storyline. It's the third one, being able to tell a story, because in 2019, there are so many people trying to tell stories across the board, not only in MMA, but just in general, movies, pop culture, TV, sports, etc. It was much easier to tell a story during the time of Liddell and Ortiz because there was just less of a, you know, overcrowding in the market. Everyone was trying to tell a damn good story. So that's the hardest issue for the UFC, is people listening to your story.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a reality that we live in MMA. I mean, the way the UFC has catered their promotion is, you know, they want their promotion to be a weekly product. And, you know, there's just these times where, you know, it's kind of in a way it's tough to look ahead. I mean, think about this. UFC 244 is next weekend. You know, it's, you know, that's finally here. It's a very good fight card. I think in terms of a pay-per-view main event, it's, you know, there's one reason you're tuning into that pay-per-view. I mean, and that's kind of, I think, the issue that the UFC does have is, but, you know, it's, you know, Chuck and Tito was a very unique thing, and it'd be interesting to see if the UFC could create that. I mean, and you know, probably Nate Diaz, Conor McGregor is probably the closest thing to that, potentially getting that. But, you know, obviously, you know, Conor's got issues away from fighting, and, you know, we've now have the New York Times for a second time writing a piece where they name the fact that they say Conor McGregor is the person that is being investigated now for a second sexual assault. And, you know, the thing that really sticks out to me about that whole situation, Daniel, is the quietness from Conor himself. Because if you were being accused of sexual assault in a New York Times article and you were innocent, you would think you would just fire off a tweet immediately. Like, the silence to me is very telling about all this.
Absolutely. the silence speaks volumes in the situation.
You know, and I know he did a press event in Ukraine yesterday, I want to say, and I believe it's on Thursday. He's doing an event in Moscow. I think it's more about promoting Proper 12, but it's one of these things of like, if you're the UFC, I don't even, you know, you're not going to release Conor McGregor from his contract, clearly, because Scott Coker would sign him immediately. But it's one of these things of the silence in all this is a thing that jumps out to me more than anything else. And it's weird. You know, it's one of these things of, you know, his people will come out and say the things they say, but it's like, why are we not hearing from Conor about this?
Yeah. And I think, again, whenever you have guys don't address allegations, it makes you think that they aren't being forthcoming and potentially are guilty.
Yeah, so. I'm more and more of the note of I think it's more and more likely that Conor McGregor will be in jail as opposed to fighting in the UFC.
That's certainly possible. Absolutely.
You know, maybe that's a 30 for 30 down the road, the rise and fall of Conor McGregor.
Yeah, I think 5 to 10 years from now, that's a big one. I mean, and Ronda Rousey.
I'm at this point, I don't think we ever see Conor McGregor in the UFC octagon again.
I honestly think we do, but I wouldn't be shocked if we don't. Like, it's difficult.
The worst thing the UFC may have done is allowed him to fight Floyd Mayweather.
Mm-hmm.
Because he made so much money that, you know, do you only come back to UFC and maybe only make 30% of that?
No.
That was the other thing about the 30 for 30 was Chuck talking about, you know, how much money they could have made in that fight with Golden Boy if it had succeeded well.
Yeah, but it's just like he was just living in an insane world where he thought there was a possibility of them getting 300,000 buys.
Yeah, man. How many UFC pay-per-views get that right now?
I mean, very few, if any, because we don't know. But
probably less than a handful.
Yeah, literally less than a handful. You could count on one hand.
You know, it's like we were having this conversation in a bar meeting, and we were talking about UFC 244, and I said, they're asking my thoughts of whether we should buy it or not. And I said, I wouldn't pay for it till the day of the fight. And they're like, well, what do you mean? I go, well, it's non-refundable. I said, so once we pay for it, we're stuck with it. What happens if Jorge Masvidal and Nate Diaz doesn't have it for some reason? Tell me who the main event of that fight card is.
Yeah. You can't come up with
a fight
one.
Night card. Look, UFC 244 is a very deep card. But when you talk about paying the type of money it costs a bar to buy that event, if Jorge Masvidal and Nate Diaz is not fighting, no thank you.
Absolutely no thank you. You got to make that decision.
Look, I know some of our listeners may look at me and think that, you know, I'm crazy for saying that, but trust me, if you knew how much these pay-per-views cost a bar to buy, you would understand where I'm coming from.
Yeah, and it just comes down to what you think the casual fan will come out and pay money to watch.
That's like my thought is that it will bring that no matter what city you're in America, like I'll be in Seattle next Saturday night. I walk into a sports bar that's showing UFC 244. I think I'm going to see a lot of what I would describe as casual sports fans that are going to tune in. But I think it's also very key on the UFC promoting it to that fan. You know, the MMA fan's going to watch. But how can they draw enough buzz to get that casual sports fan that goes, oh, this is a big deal. I got to watch this fight.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. That's what you got to do to bring in the casual fan. And often the UFC just can't do that, unfortunately.
Yeah, it happens more than you realize. Yeah. It's But I mean, I'm looking forward to December pay-per-view, the three title fights. You know, I'm sure Colby Covington's going to say something really stupid. And we'll probably get a lot of people talking.
Yeah. He's going to try his best to get eyeballs in that pay-per-view and money in his pocket. But I think that's absolutely the one you kind of got to look at and be like, there's a big one. I mean the Diaz fight is a big one too, obviously, just that fight, but the three title fights you got to fall in love with.
Oh, totally. But yeah, that'll be, of course, next week we'll talk about UFC 244. We'll recap what happens this weekend at the UFC and Bellator events. Plus, I'll have some fighter interviews for you as well. Of course, be sure to give Daniel a follow on Twitter at Daniel Galvan DGG. Give me a follow on Twitter and Instagram at Jason_Floyd. Of course, if you're not subscribed to this show, appreciate you do that on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Podcasts, and we should be on iHeartRadio any day now, so be on the lookout for that. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report Podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on any of our programming, or if you have some show ideas you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you take time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means more than you could ever know. Without you, the listener, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to all of our programming. You can find all of Radio Influence's programming on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.